I'm not afraid of losing, as long as I've done things right. This is the story of my life. Your competition, the thrill. That's why you do it.
His father, a champion jockey.
He was never happy. Then the bombshell. You're going to England. What? I'm lonely, can't speak the language, getting bullied. Then the reverse happened. We were winning everything. My life changed.
Frankie Dettori over on the far side.
And it's seven for Frankie.
I wasn't satisfied just being a jockey. I wanted to be famous.
Frankie Dettori!
Success came too quick and too easily.
That's a teaser trailer for Dettori, which is in UK cinemas now. It's a rare movie indeed, a documentary that has a cinematic release. It is quite brilliant. I've had the opportunity to watch it this morning. And the producer of Dettori, Nick Ryle, is with me on the program.
Thank you very much. Very glad to be here.
How have the past couple of weeks been as you've released your film to the world?
Well, pretty mental. It's always incredibly sort of full-on stressful time for the producer of a film, but obviously exciting. We had our premiere last week at the Curzon Mayfair in London. The Great and the Good of Racing turned out, and we had a wonderful time, but it just passed me by in a complete blur. At the end of the evening, I had no idea whether it would be a great success, total failure, really whether anybody liked it or not. It took a couple of days, and luckily it seems like people do like it. So it was fine, but it's pretty full on.
It's a rare moment for a racing film like this. We have our fictional pieces, Seabiscuit. In Australia, we have Farlap. So that's long been a cinematic piece, but not this type of film, not a documentary on such a grand figure of racing.
No, it's the second film we've done on the top jockey. We finished a film on A.P. McCoy about 6 years ago, who's the legendary jump jockey in the UK. And I wanted to do Frankie because they are the two major characters of British racing over the last sort of 20, 30 years. But Frankie's more than that. I mean, he is such an amazing character. And when you combine it with his brilliance in the saddle and his life story, it's just documentary gold. You know, it'd be very hard to go wrong. If we made a mess of this, I should have retired. Well, I should retire. But unfortunately, I don't think we have. But he's just an extraordinary guy. He's completely unique.
When you pitch the idea to him, I imagine it would appeal, as he doesn't shy away from it all. He's a great charismatic figure, and he speaks in the movie about how he coveted fame and the like, certainly in his earlier days. Did he go for it straight away?
It was interesting. I mean, he did in principle, certainly, because as you rightly point out, this is a man who's enjoys the spotlight, should we say, and always has done. But he was very smart about how he wanted it made and what he wanted it to do. And really, he told me right from the beginning, we were dealing with a very smart guy here, insightful, aware of what he meant and where he was in life. But what was really great, he said from the start, it's got to be honest. You know, I want this to be honest. I don't want it to be some sort of puff piece. And I said, well, that's good, because that's the last thing we want to make. He said, no, I want it to be honest, and I'll be honest with you. And we said, well, that's all we require. That's all we ask from our subjects. And he was as good as his word. And as you, I think you've seen the film, there are moments in there that are fairly raw. That he admits himself are not easy to watch back. And he's seen the film about three or four times now, which for him, with his attention span, which is zero, is quite an achievement, as he freely admits. And he says, I find some of it tough viewing, but I'm really glad those tough bits are in there.
They're a great
And that's great credit to him, great credit.
There are great set pieces in his career, but maybe just a couple of moments before we get to those. He's got, when he arrives in England and he recalls he was lonely, a different country, can't speak the language, the weather is awful and the food is worse, and yet he grows to become a champion apprentice. So it's a rugged start when he gets to your country.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you can only imagine. He was 14, and he was on his own, and he was landed in Newmarket, which is a tough environment at the best of times. And, I mean, it really was sink or swim. I mean, that would have been pretty tough. But such is his character, you know, he just overcame all that. And as he says in the film, within 6 months to a year, he was having a great time.
And the relationship with his father, which obviously goes through different phases, but that beautiful moment at the start. So he doesn't get the third arc with Enable, and he's in the car, and the first phone call he makes is to his dad to essentially sort of to decompress, to understand what's happened. It's his dad who's his sounding board.
Yeah, I mean, that relationship is quite extraordinary. And we had no idea really what it was when we started making the film. But, you know, it gradually became clear that these two incredibly strong characters who still fight like cats and dogs to this day, but were still bound together by this sort of dual ambition for dad to make his son champion jockey and what he is. But it is quite amazing. He does ring his father after every big race.
Yep.
He calls him, good or bad. And quite often, as you saw in the film, you know, when things haven't gone well, his father doesn't hold back.
Yes. He
tells him. I mean, I absolutely love the Gold Cup bit where he says, well, don't worry. There's no way you would have won that without shooting the one that won. And then in the report, he said, but if you'd ridden properly, you could have come second. You're too far back. Which he was. It was a shocking ride.
The landmarks of his career, so champion apprentice, seven at Royal Ascot. Maybe when you put the structure together, was it self-evident that these are the moments, the plane crash, the split with Godolphin, that they're not only the markers of his career, but that they contain so much more. So, there's almost the universal lessons of a rising star and dealing with fame and in his journey.
Well, you've absolutely nailed it there. Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right. And it was obvious as soon as I started talking to him and reading and learning about his life. There were these temples, as we call them, which hold the whole thing up. And they were the major, major moments. I mean, what happened at Ascot in, you know, with the Magnificent Seven completely transformed his life. And he was only 25, 26 then. So still a very young man. And he was absolutely catapulted onto the front pages. I mean, he became famous all over the world. And no one's ever done it since. And no one's done it before. He is the only person ever to have done that. And that was an absolutely massive moment in his life. I think probably the plane crash was the moment that carried most power in terms of telling the story of his life. Anthony, our director, if he was here, would say, when you think you're going to die and you don't, that your life changes. It's never going to be the same again. And he thinks that, frankly, has always thought, I've got a second life and I'm going to make the most of it in every way I can, whether it's having fun, riding winners, with the family, everything is to the max because I've had a second chance. And I think there's some truth in that. And when he talks about it, as you see in the film, he still gets very emotional and he knows that that was the moment in his life when things really changed. And then I think, you know, as you rightly point out, you know, the biggest blow to him of all was being in effect sacked by Godolphin. He thought he'd done nothing wrong. I don't know obviously exactly what went on behind the scenes, but you know, he couldn't take that. He literally couldn't take it, and he went to a very dark place, as you've seen. And what I find amazing, and you could catch a lot of people out with this, and say, how many winners do you think Frankie Dettori rode in 2014, in 2013. And the answer is 16. And he had a strike rate of 7%, which is like, as you know, right at the very bottom, yeah, sort of fourth division of jockeys sort of level. And that's where he was. For 3 years running, he couldn't get a ride in the Derby. I mean, he was finished. He was really finished. And he was already 42, 43 at that. So he wasn't a young man. He was at an age where a lot of people actually stopped. So I think to come back from that, and that moment when he reconnects with John Gosden, and then it leads up to a real comeback. I mean, that's the bit that always gets me. I always start to well up, even now when I watch that. Oh, wow. But I think, you know, as you can tell, it's a story so full of potential for filmmakers like us. And we saw that early on. And thank God he gave us everything we needed to tell that story. And it was a great experience. Great fun.
It's brilliant to watch. I love his COVID rationale is, I'm never retiring. If this is what retirement's like, I'm not doing it. So it might have extended him.
He is he's not good doing nothing. He's not at all good doing nothing. it was very funny. It was, but such a great character. So, you know, so life, full of life, energy, fun, everything really. And moods. I mean, he freely admits there are times when he's not much fun to be with. And we saw a bit of that.
What's his place, Nick, in the overall scheme of things? There's a couple of phases where he's referred to as the best jockey in the world. At early on, he's the best jockey of the world. At the end, I wonder if he's the greatest jockey of all time.
Well, I think if you ask people, far better place to comment than me, someone like John Gosden, he says he's the best big race rider he's ever come across, certainly. I mean, I'm sure Lester Piggott probably in his day was as good, if not better, and others from the past. But I think it's certainly in the recent era, there hasn't been a better big race rider. That's not to say he hasn't made mistakes, and some of them are quite famous. Gosden talks about a couple of rides, particularly, I think, Enable's first win in the R. He says that was a masterful ride. You could not have ridden a race better than that. The way he navigated his way through, saved her and went. He said it's just genius. Mm-hmm. And I thought the other fascinating thing that always appeals to me about the film and what we got, particularly from John Gosden, is him talking about him as a rider. And saying that unique combination of balance, athleticism, understanding of a horse, the ability to just, you know, feel what a horse can do and what it can't do. I mean, that's the gift that makes the great jockeys great. And there's no doubt he's a great jockey, greatest of all time. I think it's hard to say that perhaps, but certainly one of the very best, no question.
Nick, what chance of a cinematic release in Australia? Are you in negotiations?
Well, it's absolutely a negotiation, yeah. Our sales team are hard at work talking to a number of people I know right now in Australia, and I really hope that soon deals are done so that you guys can all see it. I'm sure there will be, but I don't have any firm detail on that, but it can't be far away, actually.
I've watched it on a laptop this morning. I'd be the first one there to see it on the big screen, so hopefully we get that chance, Nick.
I hope so too, because the big screen's where it really belongs. Yeah. But, I really hope you can see it soon.
You've done a brilliant job. Thank you for your time today.
Gerard, thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure.